This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Kinsler's back, back again. Shady's back, tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Talk some golf coming up in just a moment with Jeremy Schilling, as we do at this time every Wednesday. Hey, don't forget, speaking of golf, the Summer Golf Tour continues next Monday, 8 a.m. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com and get your foursome for 98.9. Next week is the Plantation Course at Edisto. And the foursomes will be released at 8 a.m. Monday morning at charlestonsportsradio.com. Of course, as you know by now, they go incredibly fast. They sell out within minutes. So set the alarm, mark the calendar, be ready to go. We don't take holidays off. Actually, I will be taking July 4th off. But the Summer Golf Tour doesn't take holidays off. So be ready to go Monday, because I assume the foursomes still are released Monday morning at 8 a.m., regardless of what day it is. The Plantation Course at Edisto. Get your foursome 98.9 Monday morning at charlestonsportsradio.com as we head towards the final weeks of the Summer Golf Tour. Speaking of golf, our resident golf expert joins us around this time each and every Wednesday. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill and writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I am good, Luke. I'm coming with positivity. Positivity today. And by the way, Trent, Monday, 8 a.m., you'll be on it, right? Booking that foursome?
Oh, absolutely, Jeremy. Me, you, Luke, and grab another person. We're ready to go anytime.
That's right.
Yeah. Call the number. Who wants to be the fourth? No, just kidding. You guys are getting another golf event in South Carolina. I'm not sure if you saw the announcement. Because it just came this morning with the PGA Tour is coming back for another trip around South Carolina. The CJ Cup, which has been in South Korea for much of its existence, is going to Congaree in Ridgeland, South Carolina, which hosted its own event last year, if you may remember, during the COVID year when they were trying to add tournaments to replace ones that had to be moved or canceled. So more golf coming to South Carolina.
All right. Excellent. How about that? Why not? Great golf state around here. Plenty of events, of course, come through here. So that's good news. Hey, maybe one day we'll be able to get the Slime Cup here as well. Let me ask you about this Nickelodeon Slime Cup deal that went on this past weekend where they combined golfers and celebrities and Nickelodeon people and I guess slime. I didn't watch any of it, but break it down for me. What did you think of the Slime Cup this past weekend?
You missed your homework assignment, Luke.
Yeah, I'll have to catch up on the DVR. I love a good slime on Nickelodeon. Nice sliming.
All right, so basically this was Jon Rahm, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Lexi Thompson, Justin Herbert, Saquon Barkley, Nikki, you'll have to help me out, from WWE. God, some callers are going to not like the fact that I can't name this person's last name.
Joe just smashed his sandwich somewhere.
What?
Joe Mack just smashed his sandwich all over the place somewhere listening to this, because you don't know the name of a wrestler.
I'm just not good in this area. Plus,
I don't blame you.
Nickelodeon stars competing in silly golf holes based on Nickelodeon shows. I am not a member of the Nickelodeon family, so I knew of SpongeBob. It's about all I could go there. I know that slime has been a big thing with the slime game that the NFL has done in concert with CBS. It was fun entertainment, I think, for those who can appreciate it, to see them hitting golf shots inside of the Rose Bowl and trying from one 1-yard line to the the other end zone's uprights, trying to hit the uprights for Rahm and for JT, who advanced to the final. That was fun. One with 4 seconds left by JT. I have no idea if that was rigged or not. And kudos to Jeff Newbarth, who is an actual golf producer, and the entire crew for pulling this off. Noah Eagle, Alain Eagle's son, was the voice of it. You know, it was, I think if you have somebody in that age range, try to find a way to see it again. If not, you can take a pass. But kudos to them for trying. And believe it or not, Luke, this was actually a part of the new TV deal signed in 2020, which began this year, which we talked about way back in January on this show, with Viacom CBS, which is now like Paramount Global or some other name, or Paramount World, the company's been renamed to. So this is actually a part of a PGA Tour and LPGA Tour TV deal, believe it or not.
You weren't a Nickelodeon kid growing up, or you're just saying this stuff was all after your time? No, not into Nick.
So, no. It's stuff after my time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I was not a big Nickelodeon kid. I was a Sesame Street, Thomas the Tank Engine. I was a PBS kid.
Ah, PBS. Hey, would you rather watch an NFL playoff game, or would you rather watch golf on Nickelodeon? What did you like better?
You know what? I did not watch a lot of the Slime game, the Slime playoff game, but I think this I was able to appreciate more just because I knew what we were talking about here, but some of these references from some of these Nickelodeon characters, like, I have no idea where that came from, and I apologize. So it was, I think, the football game was probably purer for those. I was curious to see how golf would translate onto a Nickelodeon program, which is why I was even watching it in the first place. But my connection to it, it's probably pure for football, but more intrigue for golf. Does that make sense?
Yeah, certainly. I'll have to check it out on the old DVR, see how things went. Because I watched all the football game on Nick. I'll have to watch the Slime Cup, see how they did with golf on Nickelodeon, as we talk with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. All right, let's transition out of the Slime Cup and get to some other things going on. The Travelers. In my old stomping grounds, I had a bit of a wild finish on Sunday. As we go back to this past weekend, what stood out to you about the Travelers Championship up in Connecticut?
Oh, man. Some may remember Sahith Tagala from Super Bowl weekend in Phoenix, who surged to the lead. He had his family fly in. He gets a bad bounce on the drivable 17th, which sank his chances. And he had a one-shot lead over Xander Schauffele on the 18th hole. On the 72nd hole, he played just a tremendous round of golf to get himself back into this position. And there are times where you go and there are times where you don't go. And playing straight downwind, I was with Sir Nick Faldo that he did not need to hit driver. I know folks out there that he does not carry a 3-wood. It would have been a driving iron further back with that second shot, but you're playing with a one-shot lead. And you know that. It's not like you didn't know the information. You know that. So the fact that he made that poor decision and compounded it, I believe, he thought he had enough room between himself and the bunker and that steep lip. He winds up hitting the lip and it comes back to his feet and ultimately makes double bogey and Xander's able to go on and win. But for me, it was the compounding of two poor decisions. He should have pitched out. He was all the way down there. I mean, it's not like he had a long way to go with the second shot. Hit it on the green somewhere, try to make a par, if not bogey, and at least you put the pressure on Xander. Xander was then able to play 18 freely. He's going to get his win, and I hope that my tweet late Sunday into Monday clarified things. I love Sahith. I think he's got a great, just a tremendous amount of talent going forward. I disagreed with two decisions that he made, but that does not take away from the type of game that he has and the type of baller that he is. I mean, he went into Sunday facing two behemoths in Xander and Patrick Cantlay, and nearly took both of them down. So nothing against him. He just made two poor decisions. You'll learn from that. You'll get better from that. And I think he'll win and could win very soon.
I've been paying attention, but you're obviously more dialed into all this stuff with LIV Golf and everything going on with the PGA Tour. I've seen the quotes. I've seen the justifications. I've seen dueling press conferences. Seems like a lot more talking since we last talked with you about all this. So give us the lowdown. Over the last week, what's the latest with the LIV Golf Tour, the PGA Tour, guys moving around, press conferences? What's the latest there?
Yeah, so let's just give a shout-out to Inji Chun, by the way, who won the KPMG Women's PGA at the brand-new Blue Course at Congressional Country Club. Place looks great. She held on to what was at one point a seven-shot lead earlier in the week. Lexi Thompson made a surge, and then Lexi just couldn't hit the putts down the stretch. And it's hard to watch. And I feel really bad for Lexi Thompson, and I hope she can bounce back quick from this and get that major, which she's been coveting for, you know, so long now. I think it's 5 years. And she hasn't won anything since 2019. So it's been a long time waiting for her. In terms of the men, the PGA Tour, LIV Golf. LIV Golf is living just like it wants to live. And it's in Portland, Oregon this week. There have been resignations from members of that Portland, Oregon golf club, Pumpkin Ridge, who are not happy. The local and state governments are not happy with LIV there. And the sports washing that continues, in my opinion. The DP World Tour, formerly known as the European Tour, had a decision to make because of their financial situation, which is way too complicated for this podcast. Get in bed with the Saudis or stick with the PGA Tour and expand the strategic alliance. They decided to stick with the PGA Tour. Men's golf, as we know it, stays intact for now, except for the defections that have, you know, since happened and will happen little by little. Nobody big yet, really, except for Mr. Koepka, Brooks Koepka, that is. The big part of this strategic alliance is now a way for DP World Tour, which means European Tour players, to get to the PGA Tour. Top 10 final race to Dubai standings, not already exempt players, would get to the PGA Tour. This basically determined yesterday, along with a whole bunch of other stuff, that the PGA Tour is the preeminent place to play. And yes, 14 of the top 15 in the world are playing in the Scottish Open next week. But the PGA Tour is where it's at, and the PGA Tour is coming in to expand their relationship, put down a boatload of money to lift up the European Tour and keep it going so that it can keep cultivating and help guys from other tours get to the European Tour and then eventually get to the PGA Tour. That's that part of it. As part of this, Korn Ferry Tour, which is the PGA Tour AAA, changed their qualification deal. Now 30 guys getting tour cards plus top five in ties from Q School, which went away in 2013, which I thought was a bad decision at the time. I wrote about it at the time. Qualifying school is back. It's dramatic television. It is as anti-slime cup as you can get. But this is a big, big victory for the PGA Tour, a big, big victory for the European Tour, and a blow to the Saudis who thought that they could get a way in, and which brings us to a meeting 2 weeks from now when they will maybe or maybe not try to get accreditation from the official World Golf Ranking Board to get world ranking points, which would be their way into the majors for these players going forward. If not, these guys are going to fall off and they won't qualify. And as I've been saying for weeks now, the fate of the Saudi-backed golf league comes down to world ranking points and what Masters tournament chairman Fred Ridley does. That's the summary of where we are there, Luke. because it'll come down to a board and it'll come down to Fred Ridley. I believe, and there will be a day to talk about the fallout from this and the fact that these guys are tripping over themselves in press conferences because they can't keep their story straight. It's crazy. It's absolutely berserk.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. We'll continue to see what happens, and obviously Jeremy will give us the latest each week with all this as we talk golf with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, on Twitter, at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine. Hey, we got the John Deere Classic coming up. What should we expect with that?
This is a really weak field. I'll just say it flat out. This is a really weak field. By the way, Matt Wolf, Carlos Ortiz, both went to LIV Golf. You won't see them anytime soon on the PGA Tour. This is a really weak field. So I had to look hard for a name. Nick Hardy. This is a guy, Korn Ferry Tour grad, had a really rough 2021-2022 season going. Mostly because of an injury. Since the Zurich Classic, T21, T35, T14 at the U.S. Open, T8 at the Travelers, working his way up. Nick Hardy went to the University of Illinois, was known by his coach Mike Small as a guy who liked to work. And you know guys who work hard, eventually you will fly right if you get in the right situation. He's already, just to give you an example of purse increases, in his career, he's already won over $1 million through various starts and sponsor exemptions and all that. So this is a guy who's won a lot of money. Now he's looking for status, and I believe Nick Hardy gets his first win this week on the PGA Tour.
All right, we'll see if it happens. That'll be exciting. Hey, before we let you go, I got to ask you, is Tiger Woods, we're going to see Tiger back out in the course next week?
Yes, we are scheduled to see Tiger at an event called the J.P. McManus Pro-Am. It is held every year in the run-up to the Open, the 150th Open. I'm just going to run through names here that are in this field, and just tell me, Luke, if you've heard of these people, Patrick Cantlay, Bryson, Matt Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, Rory, Justin Thomas, Scotty Scheffler, Jordan Spieth, Tiger, Vern Biesberger, Niall Horan from One Direction, Bill Murray, Mark Wahlberg. That sound right?
Yeah, sounds like a pretty good group.
This starts Monday, July 4th, Tuesday, July 5th. It will stream, my current understanding, subject to change, is that it will stream live on Peacock in the mornings and air on Golf Channel and Encore presentations at night. Peacock in the morning, Golf Channel at night. This is July 4th and 5th, Monday and Tuesday of next week, and it will be Tiger's first appearance in any kind of golf setting since he withdrew from the PGA Championship with that 79. He is still scheduled to play the 150th Open at St. Andrews in 2 weeks. This is a very significant mile marker for Tiger and his recovery, and we will talk about that, if he competes, that is, next week.
Yeah, anytime, it's a story now. Anytime Tiger gets out there, it's like must-see TV. So looking forward to that next week. He's Jeremy Schilling.
What's going to be very interesting, Luke, by the way, sorry to interrupt, and I'll be quick with this. This is a very laid-back environment. I don't know if it's cart or no cart, but whether it is, it's only 36 holes, it's only 2 days, and the amount of stress that he has to put on his mind golf-wise goes way down, which means the amount of focus he can put on his body goes way up. So this will be a good determination of, does he look like somebody who can compete at the Open? But I don't think making a definitive point on his health will come from this hit and giggle, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what we get next week. We'll break it down. He's Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. On Twitter at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine, joins us every week. Jeremy, appreciate it as always. We'll catch up with you down the road.
For what it's worth, Trent told me that he watched the Slime Cup, so you may have a Trent Take segment coming.
Perfect. I can't wait to watch it myself. I'm looking forward to the Slime Cup.
This is a future content piece for you for February. Yeah, why didn't... Who was the flight attendant that was supposed to call in way back in, like, February? Whatever happened to those segments?
I know. We got to search. We got to find one. We still got plenty of downtime. Yeah, until
all
September.
All these people, call back in. Hey, have fun, guys. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, likewise. Take care. Jeremy Schilling, who joins us every week. Yeah, we do have to have a flight attendant on. I don't know any flight attendants. Trent, you know any flight attendants?
I mean, yeah, I know some past flight attendants that are in my family lineage. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if we need any flight attendant stories, you know, my family's got a couple good ones.
I think a flight attendant would be a really interesting guest. I'm sure they have a ton of stories. did you watch any of the Slime Cup?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I don't know where Jeremy was getting that information from because,
news. Yeah,
I didn't tune into the Slime Cup. I did tell him that I was waiting on pins and needles to hear his review of the Slime Cup, but no, I unfortunately didn't tune in.
So here's what's interesting. Jeremy's older than me. I'm older than you, Trent. So we have not different generations, but at least in terms of like what was popular when you were growing up, Jeremy was a PBS kid. My family, my brothers and I, and I'm the youngest, so they may have had some other differences as well, but I also know all three of us, my older brothers and I, we were big into Nick and Disney, Nickelodeon and Disney. And then as I grew up and you meet more people, that kind of became a little bit like a rivalry. Kids were either Nickelodeon or they were Disney. I went to college, a good friend of mine now who grew up, they didn't have Nickelodeon, so we never watched anything on Nick, or it was the opposite. They didn't have Disney, I think. So he never watched anything on Disney, and he was a Nickelodeon kid. It was a big deal. And so when I was growing up, as a kid in the 90s, oh my goodness, Nickelodeon and Disney, so many great shows. So then, Trent, I ask you, when you were growing up, was it still Nickelodeon? Was it Disney? What did you grow up watching as a kid?
Early 2000s, Luke, I'd have to say it was a mixture of both. Yeah, I think I tuned into Nickelodeon, Disney, a lot of SportsCenter. I can tell you that right now. My TV was usually on ESPN. But, you know, if I wanted to watch, you know, a couple of Disney shows here and there, I would say, though, Disney probably dominated the household more than Nickelodeon. I feel like Nickelodeon didn't produce the amount of shows necessary for, you know, a 4-children household.
Yeah, I get that. SportsCenter, of course, yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
And SportsCenter was so great back in the day. It's not the same quality now. And it would be the point that you would just leave it on all day, and then the SportsCenter would never change. And by the time you got to, like, noon or whatever, you already watched it 4 times, you knew what was coming next. You could do the script for him. And then at that point, you realize, like, all right, I probably should change the channel. I should go outside and do something. I've seen SportsCenter 4 times in a row. But back in the day, Nickelodeon, Disney, they were the best. Nickelodeon, the amount of shows that they pumped out in the 90s that were so good. And you had Kenan and Kel, and you had Rocko's Modern Life, which was like, yeah, that wasn't really a kid show. The other one was Ren and Stimpy was another one. Like that one, if you go back and you watch it, like, that was adults making a kid show that was really, like, for adults. And then, of course, Rugrats and Hey Arnold and Real Monsters was a hit. And I love the game shows. Anything with Summer Sanders back in the day, I'm watching it. Figure It Out. Double Dare. Legends of the Hidden Temple. So good. I'm all for slime. I'm all for watching sporting events on Nickelodeon that implements the slime. And then, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I've always felt this way. When it comes to amusement parks, people always love Disney. But Disney, I don't know if I would say it's overrated, but Universal Studios is better. Go to Universal.
Whoa. Hot take.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's a hot, steaming take.
Get Disney out. Universal's where it's at.
Wow.
And I remember when we were kids, we went down there and we went, because they used to have like the Nickelodeon, they had their studios down there, and we were waiting outside and they were filming, I don't know what it was, All That or Kenan and Kel or something. That was a real big thrill. That was a lot of fun. Get Disney out. I'm a Universal guy. And Disney's okay. I went to Disney a few years ago, but I think Universal's the better one. Very underrated. If you're ever going down to Orlando to the amusement parks, forget Disney. Everyone goes to Disney. It's too the lines are too long. It's too busy. It's too much going on. Universal, the underrated one. And back in the day, too, you'd always wait for the movies on Disney. That's what Disney really had going for them. And it'd be like the third Friday of every month. And when you were a kid, like, you weren't going out on Fridays. You had to be in bed at whatever time. So you always look forward to those movies. My Date with the President's Daughter, H.E. Double Hockey Sticks, Brink, The Paper Brigade, oh, classic movies on Disney in the 90s. Love those. What a great childhood. And then the Slime Cup, by the way, was like at 8 o'clock. I feel like that's too late. Are kids staying up to watch golf at 8 o'clock on a Saturday? I feel like you got to make that a little bit earlier in the night. But that was always a big night. Parents were going out. Babysitter would come over. We'd make some chicken nuggets in the oven and sit down and watch the Disney movie. What a time to be alive back in the day.
Simpler times.
Oh,
simpler
you're not times. Kidding. Yeah, absolutely. And you'd watch Will Friedle in his latest Disney movie every week or every month. Hey, when we come back, how important is it to have the ability to throw a baseball well? I'll explain what I mean next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. How important is it to have the ability to throw a baseball, to look like you know what you're doing? Because I think this was Monday night. It was over the weekend. Canelo and Triple G, they're getting ready for their third fight with one another in September. They were both at Yankee Stadium to promote the thing. And they met, you know, at home plate, like before the game, and then they had to throw a first pitch. And there's video of Canelo, like, even warming up in the clubhouse beforehand and trying to deliver the baseball. His first pitch wasn't great. And then if you watch the video of him, the warm-ups is even worse. The fact that he warmed up for it, and when you watch the warm-ups, it looks terrible throwing the baseball. I'm watching the video right now. Ah, it's ugly. He can't get it to the plate. And the form is terrible. Now, obviously, Canelo, he's a fighter. He's a boxer. I don't know if he grew up playing baseball. But I got to be honest, I watched that video. Look, if Canelo and I got in a ring, he would embarrass me. But suddenly, I tell you, he would actually, he more than embarrass me, he'd probably kill me. But I tell you, suddenly, he's not looking as intimidating. I watch him get up there, try to throw a baseball. I don't know. Canelo, if I was Triple G, I'd say, oh, this is the guy I'm fighting? No problem.
Hey, Luke, let's watch our words. Let's watch our words here. I don't need anybody in the Canelo camp banging on 60 Markfield Drive here looking for you, Luke, because that's the only time I would never defend you. If Canelo was staring you right in the face, I'd say, yeah, Luke, you're on your own on this one.
Well, you know, people say that we look alike around here.
Yeah, that's
so
a good
they
point.
Show up. Oh, that's him over there. No, I'm Trent. That's Luke over there talking trash. But I do think I think throwing a baseball is important in that sense. Probably because you see it more often. Like, a lot of people can't shoot a basketball well. You grew up maybe focusing on a certain sport. But because we always have these first pitches, I think that's why we see people throw a baseball more often than we see throw a football or shoot a basketball. You know, like, it's a big deal. Props to really all the presidents usually do a really good job. Nobody was greater than George Bush after September 11th, delivering a perfect strike at Yankee Stadium. Now, he played baseball. And obviously his family was involved with the Texas Rangers in Major League Baseball. But that's like a lot of pressure for – you can't go up there and be the guy that botches a first pitch as a president or as a celebrity. But when you're an athlete, like, it looks even worse because you're expected to be athletic and you can't throw a baseball. I'm not talking about, like, if you bounce it, that's fine. I'd probably throw one wildly out of the strike zone. But you have to at least look the part. Like, I usually play pickup basketball on Wednesdays, and you could tell if somebody played basketball before. They may not be great. They may be rusty. They may be a step slow. They may be missing their shots. But you can tell when you watch them, like, oh, yeah, that's somebody that probably grew up playing the sport. Other guys you watch, somebody shows up in jeans, and you realize, like, oh, yeah, this guy's never played basketball. What is he doing showing up in jeans? And I'm sure it's the same day with football. You watch somebody throw a football, like, oh, yeah, that guy's played before. Or if they run a route, like, you have some idea, and they may be slower now. They may not have as good of a cut or footwork. But you can see that, oh, yeah, one time they did play. Anyways, you watch Canelo throw a baseball. It looks like the guy just picked up a baseball for the first time. How important do you think it is, Trent, to be able to look like you know what you're doing when you throw a baseball?
I think it's incredibly important, Luke. That's how I kind of test people. You know, I'm not an all-star athlete by any stretch of the imagination, but we all in this room played sports growing up, so we know how to throw a ball. But you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to take a lot of these NFL insiders and reporters and some of the basketball insiders and just see them throw a ball, any kind of ball. See them throw a baseball, a football, maybe shoot a basketball. Because, I mean, we saw a video of Max Kellerman shooting a basketball a couple weeks back. The guy, I mean, rips on people for not being able to take good jumpers. Hey, pal, I mean, I saw the video. What are we doing? But I think it's incredibly important, you know, just to make sure you have a little bit of athleticism in you.
Yeah, you got to look the part. There's a little like machismo to it as well, right? If you see somebody like, oh, they can't throw a baseball. You know, like everybody, Tom Cruise was in War of the Worlds. Was in one of the scenes, he was playing catch and didn't have a great form, and people would make fun of him for years afterwards. Like it's a knock on your athleticism or even like your manhood. You can't throw a baseball? What are you doing? You can't throw a football?
I will say, though, Canelo and like I remember McGregor when he first threw out a pitch and it went like incredibly.
Yeah.
Those guys are different type of athletes. Their true. Mindset is much different than us, but they are, you know, at the top of their sports, so they're some of the best athletes in the world. They can't throw baseballs. I don't know why, but it's probably because they've been, you know, beating people's faces in for 20-plus years.
Oh, it's true. Those guys would knock my head off. But I could probably throw a better baseball. Max Kellerman was disappointing. I do like I like Max Kellerman. But what's so disappointing is that he grew up in New York City. Yeah. You would think he grew up, like, at the parks playing pickup basketball. You probably didn't see the video. You'd have to go see it online. It is atrocious, his form on shooting a foul shot. And then he shared on the show that he practiced 200 foul shots, and he said he made – I think it was 15%. That is unbelievable. I think you could blindfold my mother and she can make 15%. Like, how do you shoot 200 foul shots, you only make 30? That was embarrassing.
He emphasized too much. I know they say, you know, keep whatever your non-dominant hand a little bit off the ball.
Yeah.
So you're basically kind of shooting with one hand. He took that to the extreme where he literally just put like a shot putt, just pushed the ball up in the air where, no, you can still put your hand out there. It's just a little bit more control on the ball.
Yeah, it was bad. That was a bad look for a New York City kid who works in sports.
Yeah.
Now, he was also – Kellerman's also a boxer, so I guess there's something about these fighters that they just didn't play the other sports. I grew up playing all the sports. I wasn't a good enough athlete. That's why I talk about sports for a living instead of play them. But I at least could – I wouldn't completely embarrass myself. I would look like I've shot a basketball before, or thrown a baseball before, or football, because, of course, I did that growing up. Now, that leads me to my next question. If you could only choose one, you could either be like a great shooter – you could be great at throwing a football. You could be great at throwing a baseball. I'm not talking about for a professional career.
Okay.
You are you right now, but you could be incredibly good at one of these things. What would you pick? Like, what would be the most impressive that if you and your buddies were just hanging out, you pick up a basketball, baseball, football, and you can wow people. Like, wow, look at this guy throw either a baseball, basketball, football. What do you think would be the most impressive skill to have?
I think I've already got the football locked down, so I would say the basketball. I feel like picking up a basketball, being able to just light it up from deep is probably one of the more cooler things you can do in your friend group. That, you know, the street cred goes up about 1 or 2 points.
Yeah, that's a good way to that's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, which one gets you like the most street cred?
Yeah, I mean, if you got a good jumper, I think overall, especially like, you know, you're playing pickup basketball tonight, hopefully, if it doesn't rain, so, you know, potentially. But yeah, I think shooting would be more important in our lives now. It's like I can still throw a football, throw a baseball whenever I have a child one day, but if I can go when I'm 40 with the boys we're going to play on a Sunday morning, yeah, I want to be able to drain a couple threes.
I agree with you. Now, I thought maybe it was just because I had a basketball. You know, I just grew up, basketball is always the sport.
Right.
But I do have that same feeling that if you show up to a park and you're just knocking down threes, I think that's more impressive than like being able to whip a baseball or a football at the beach. You know, you throw a football into the water. Like, that's good and well. But I don't know. If you're knocking down the three-pointers at your buddy's driveway, I think that's probably the best. Anyways, I saw this clip. You could go find it online. But Canelo, worse than even the throw is he's warming up in the clubhouse, and it's just terrible form and not good. Great fighter, great boxer, but obviously I guess didn't grow up playing baseball because he can't throw a baseball. That's a bad sign, right? If you see someone, they don't know what they're doing with a baseball. That's a knock on them. I got to be honest, especially if they're an athlete. When we come back, we'll get to Trent's takes. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the babies, mamas, mamas. Mamas, mamas. Baby mamas, mamas. Yeah, go like this. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Just got the email from friend of the show, Paul Charchian, about the guillotine leagues for this year. So, you know, football's coming right around the corner. Now, Trent, you're not a fan. You haven't been a fantasy football player lately, right?
No, but I want to. I want to. I might have to hop in a league you're in or, you know, one of our interns back here. If they got a league I can join, because I don't want to, you know, make a league and, you know, hassle everybody for money or whatever. I just want to join in. Whatever the buy-in is, let's roll.
We'll have to get you into one of Charch's guillotine leagues.
Yeah.
Those are always fun.
Why not?
Hey, we do it around this time each and every day. Find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's Panther. Right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The Radio Cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, real quick, movie question for you, because you are a movie savant. As we know, I've seen majority of Leo's movies because I'm a big Leo guy. I don't think I've ever seen The Aviator, and I was scrolling through HBO Max last night just trying to find something to watch. Couldn't really pinpoint. I never seen 12 Years of Slave, so I was thinking about watching that, but I didn't want to get sad. So I was looking at The Aviator, but also the Aviator, right, like follows a billionaire who's got a lot of depression and things of that nature, but it won an Oscar. So I was going to ask you if you've ever seen The Aviator, and is it worth the 2 hours and 35 minutes that I'd watch it?
I would say definitely.
Okay.
Now, I haven't seen it since. I just looked it up. It came out in 2004. I saw it like when it first came out on, maybe it was VHS back then.
Okay.
So I probably saw it last time. I've only seen it once, and it was probably, you know, 16, 17 years ago. But yeah, excellent movie. I really liked it at the time. It's Scorsese.
Yeah.
It's Leo. It's a good story. I watched it with my family at the time. I think we all loved it. Yeah, good movie. I recommend The Aviator.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I saw Scorsese with Leo, I said, oh, this is going to be a banger, as we know. But I wanted to clarify with you before I spent about 3 hours watching the film, you know, because I feel like it's one of those where it might get slow in the middle and really pick up at the end. So, you know, I got to really bunker down and get ready to go for it. But I'm pumped. I think I'm going to watch it tonight and tune in tomorrow for Trent's Takes with a full review on The Aviator. So I'll probably keep doing that because we're in a slow time in sports. Speaking of slow time, do have to mention this, Luke. Plans have been unveiled for a nuclear-powered Sky Hotel that can carry about 5,000 people, basically a cruise ship in the sky. Now, Luke, we've mentioned on the show before, I would love to go to space. If I could get in one of these Blue Origin SpaceX rockets, send me up there. I'd absolutely love to go and see it for, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes. But I don't want to be, you know, 40,000 feet in the air with 5,000 other people on a cruise ship-sized plane that is powered, you know, nuclear-powered. And, yeah, that just doesn't sound like something I'd enjoy. What if it, you know, what if something goes wrong? We're in the sky. It's like on water, it's a little different because it's easily accessible. Now it's like, oh, we're just in the sky. How can anything get done? I don't understand it.
I'm with you 100%. I watched this video. So my first thought was, because they show they have like a shopping mall inside. They have restaurants. It's like a hotel. They said they have a space for meetings. They have a theater. They have games for kids.
Yeah.
I thought, how does the flight never end? Like, why do you need all this on a plane? And then they said the plane, it could be in the air for years.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get this. What is the point? So it's just supposed to be like a cruise, but in the air? Like, you go spend a week on a plane flying around for, why? I don't get this idea. I would not want to do it. I'm with you.
Yeah.
If there's an issue in the ocean, I can at least swim. I could tread water. Hopefully we're close enough to land. They have boats that you could jump on, like into the Titanic, to get to shore. If something goes wrong in the air, like, sorry, I mean, there's not much you can do. I do not get this idea, and it's not appealing to me.
No, and hopefully if you're in the water, Rose scoots over just a tad bit, because, I mean, what are we doing? There was enough room for Leo. Unbelievable. Luke, last night, San Francisco Giants get a win against the Detroit Tigers. Shout out to my boy, Mike Yarmetsky, absolutely dominant, was playing in the field, had a diving catch, phenomenal win, 4-3. 5 games back of the Dodgers right now, 3.5 back from the Padres going into the All-Star break. You're more of a baseball savant than I am, Luke. I'm just kind of getting into this ball game. I like the direction the San Francisco Giants are going right now. I like the margin of victories to be a little bigger against these teams like the Detroit Tigers. I believe they're a 1.5-point favorite going into the game. Beat them by 1, that's okay. But right now, do you think the San Francisco Giants are in a decent position to potentially make a run in the playoffs?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, that's such a tough division. Now, I've been talking this week in other areas about, you know, the best teams usually come from the best division, so that could be a good thing for the Giants. But you look at the NL, it's a blessing and a curse because it makes it harder for the Giants to try to win enough games to get into the playoffs. The Central is pretty bad, and right now the East, outside of the Mets and the Braves, are pretty bad. So that NL West probably is going to get 3 playoff teams, the Giants, Padres, and Dodgers. But it's going to make it harder for the Giants. They may be like the last team in because they have to play the Dodgers 19 times and the Padres 19 times. But iron sharpens iron, they say. So, you know, in the long haul, maybe they'll be better off for it. But the Giants certainly are a top 6 team in the NL. They should be a playoff team. And I think they could make some noise in October, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking potentially I get invited out to the championship parade if it happens. You know, I'm just kind of being hopeful here. I am the number one San Francisco Giants fan in the area. I claim that title, so thank you very much. Luke, we are 71 days from NFL football. And so I ask you this question here. I'll give my answer, then I would like your answer. Which team out of these two has a better chance, not going off their schedule right now? Let's think of division, conference, and the rosters that they have. Which team has a better chance of going starting the season 7-1? Is it the Denver Broncos or the Dallas Cowboys? Based on divisions and strength, you know, as far as roster goes, right now I would have to say the Dallas Cowboys have a better chance of starting 7-1 than the Denver Broncos right now.
I agree with you, just based off of the division.
Yeah.
And the NFC East should be much easier than the AFC West. I think if all things were equal, I think I like the Broncos more than the Cowboys.
Sure.
And I certainly like Russ more than Dak. But, yeah, because of those divisions, the Cowboys, I mean, they could probably go 5-1 this year in their division. And the Broncos, like, if you go 500 in that division, that's still probably a success. So I would agree with you. Just based off of divisions, Cowboys have the better chance of having a better start to the year, I would imagine.
Folks, NFL football is right around the corner. I cannot wait. 71 days. We just got to get through 71 days, Luke. That's all it is. Quick side note here. How many times does Sam Acho have to say Patrick Mahomes will be better without Tyreek Hill? We can move on from that. Just a curious, you know, point that I'd like to bring up. He mentions it every single week. I mean, what are we doing? Tyreek Hill is one of the most prolific players in the NFL. He makes any team that he's with better. You could say Patrick Mahomes potentially will have a better stat season without Tyreek Hill, but the team won't be better without Tyreek Hill. I hate to break to you. Do you agree with that? Like, I think I'm crazy. I feel like I'm crazy for saying that the team probably won't be as good without one of the most prolific players in the NFL.
Yeah, I guess I would not be like Sam Acho going out there every week saying that this is going to be better for Mahomes better for the Chiefs. I'm more with you where, yeah, I could see him, like, statistically having a better year, or the Chiefs winning more games, or the offense looking better. But I think if you had the option, you would still rather have Tyreek Hill on the team than not have him. I still think the Chiefs would be fine. But, yeah, I would say that they would prefer, even they would, if they were being honest with you, they'd prefer to still have Tyreek if it wasn't for the amount of money he was asking for.
Yeah, I mean, they say it's hot boy summer, but it's hot take summer for Sam Acho right now, and he's absolutely crushing it. Luke, another odds question here. Switching over to college football.
Mm-hmm.
Does Texas A&M or Texas have a better chance to win 10-plus games this season? Now, I'll give you the odds real quick. A&M is at plus 130, but let's remember, A&M is in the SEC East.
Yeah.
Especially, they're in the SEC West. Incredibly difficult. Texas is plus 200 right now to win 10-plus games in the Big 12. We don't know what Quinn Ewers is going to look like right now. The offense sure looks good with the amount of talent they have surrounding a young quarterback like Quinn Ewers. Who has a better chance right now to win 10-plus games?
That's a good question. I think I still take my chances with A&M.
Wow.
Because I just think they're that much better than Texas. Texas is in the weaker conference. But they won only 5 games last year, so you're asking for them to double their record, which is a lot. A&M, they won, 8 last year? Can you add 2 more wins this year? I know it's a really tough conference, but I think that's more realistic to see that improvement even in the SEC. They were almost a playoff team 2 years ago, so they have it in them. Texas, I still have a lot of questions about Texas. I got to see Quinn Ewers first before I could believe in that team. I think Texas right now is very overvalued. So I would probably take my chances with A&M even in the tougher SEC.
I got you. No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm the only one that's really high on Southern Cal this year and really high on Texas this year. I feel like I want them to be back just because it makes college football better. As we always say, we need more parity. Now, granted, if Texas or Southern Cal gets into the college football playoff and they have to take on an Alabama, an Ohio State, or a Georgia, good luck. That's all I got to say to you. But, I mean, it would be nice to see a couple more faces kind of get in the mix here as we get down, maybe in the top 10, top 5, and then obviously the college football playoff. Last thing here, Luke Morrow, I forgot to mention this about the cruise in the sky, if you will. Did you see the recent video of the Viking cruise that they lost power to their engine and they were in a massive wave storm? And so there were people sitting in this beautiful lounge and the engine's cut off. And so the boat, like, literally people are sliding down the floors, going into the windows left and right. There's pianos flying everywhere. This is why I'm not a cruise guy. The ocean, I swim in the ocean, love the ocean, go out there all the time. but the deep ocean, Luke Morrow. When you get out there where you can't see anything, that's when I don't mess with the ocean. They were in the middle of nowhere. The wind was howling. The waves were big. And they've got furniture flying everywhere. People are sliding left and right. Not a cruise guy for that sole reason right then and there.
I got to look up this video. I did not hear about this.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. That is brutal. I've been on 3 cruises. I don't care to ever go on another one. The last one I went on was in March, and the waters were still rough because it was still, you know, kind of cold around here.
Sure.
And that one was tough.
Oh, you went out of here?
Yeah, out of, I think it was Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
Out of Maryland. So, and it was still, you know, it was March, so, like, in certain areas, the water's still cold. I don't know if there's still, like, ice in the water, whatever, you know, and so it's choppy until we got to the tropical islands. So, yeah, the first couple days were brutal. They had to tape up barf bags in all the hallways because so many people were getting seasick.
See, I mean, what are we doing there? I'm on this boat for a week, and you know, it's mandatory barf bags over
right.
here. On the plane, it makes sense. It's right in front of me. I'm only here for 3 hours.
Fortunately, I was fine. And but yeah, a lot of people. I think everybody in my group was fine. I don't think we really had an issue. But a lot of people
seasick.
Are getting sick.
Do you get seasick?
Knock on wood. I never had an issue with that.
Yeah, I don't get seasick.
I have a problem. Plane, same idea, knock on wood. Like, I don't have a problem. My biggest issue is actually in the car. Like, I can't read in the car. I get car sick.
Oh, so like going through Twitter or something?
Even that. After a little while, I got to be careful. If I'm on my phone for a good amount of time, like after a half hour, it's like, all right, I got to put the phone away. I'm getting a little nauseous. But yeah, I can't like read a magazine or a book in the car. I really can't do it. Even like, I don't like really watching things in the car either. So for whatever reason, the car gives me the most trouble. Or even like a bus.
Can you sleep in a car or plane?
Oh, yeah. I can sleep anywhere, yeah.
Dang, I can't. I can't do it.
I don't sleep on planes anymore, though, because I found that whenever I'd sleep on a plane and then I get to my destination, I would feel, like, so exhausted. And my theory was always from, like, dehydration.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So now I say I can't fall asleep. I stay up, and I make sure I'm just sitting there drinking water the whole time so that when I land, I feel good. So that's my problem. So I stopped sleeping on planes because I used to – that would be the only thing I'd do. I'd sleep the whole flight, and then I land, and, I wasn't drinking any – I wasn't hydrating.
You're all out of whack, too.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know where you are. You wake up. I don't sleep on planes anymore because I fell asleep on somebody's shoulder one time sitting next to me,
yeah.
And that was super embarrassing. The guy was very nice, but I was just like, was I asleep on you the entire time? And he was like, yeah, just about. I didn't want to wake you. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, that's the worst. I'm always afraid of that. You're nodding off, and you're slowly leaning into your passenger. That's always a bad look. We'll wrap up hour 2 next. It's the Morning Midday Show on ESPN Radio.